And welcome again to The Age Stage. Great to have your company. Hi, everyone. I'm Brendan Telfer here at RPFM Studios in Mornington, 98.7 and 98.3. You're hearing us on. We're also on the World Wide Web, and we're also streaming as well on our apps. And, of course, The Age Stage is made possible by The Village Baxter, The Village Glen, and Encore Living for that rural alternative. In the studio with me today, Paula Dunn. Welcome, Paula. Great to have your company. Welcome back.
Nice to be here, Brendan. But it's a freezing day.
It's been a freezing old day, been a freezing old week,
yes.
And the prospects ain't too good, yes. And I reckon we might get a few snow flurries around.
I think so.
Snow plough. I think I might start practicing my snow
yes.
plough. It's National Stroke Week.
It is.
And we're going to be speaking to somebody, an inspirational somebody a little bit later on in the program who has recovered from stroke. And also we've got Felicity Wood.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to be talking to us about backs a little bit later on as well.
Okay.
Not quite as dramatic perhaps as stroke, but certainly if you have a bad back.
Very common.
It ain't good to have.
No.
But it's delighted, we're delighted to be welcoming Kim Jackson back to the studios with us again. Kim, welcome. Executive Manager of the Village Baxter, and thank you very much indeed for being here.
Thank you for having me back.
Because the hombres are away. They are. They've scarpered.
They left without us.
They have.
They promised they'd take us.
Mm.
Yes. Didn't they, Brendan?
But they did.
No, they've gone overseas
or,
without us.
Or at least I could drive the BMW.
Yes, I would have carried the bag.
Mm. But anyway, they're not here. Kim, so it's cold, it's wet, it's been miserable. It's the middle of winter. Theoretically, we're into the first few weeks of spring. But that's prompted you to think about health issues, flus. What do we do? And especially for older Australians, because this, of course, is what The Age Stage is all about, a program designed for older Australians in which we look at issues that concern them. And flu, given your role, must be sort of foremost in your mind at this time of the year.
Absolutely. And we're having a very unusual flu season this year, much more severe than we've seen the last few years. And so far, there's over 133,000 Australians with confirmed flu, and we've still got 8 weeks of flu season to go.
That's
wow.
incredible.
And is that influenza A?
That's all the different strains of influenza.
Of flu. Oh, wow.
Influenza A is the big one that you'll read a lot about in the newspapers
yes. yep.
over the last few weeks, and that's the one that's been really affecting the elderly this season.
Mm.
Well, as the executive manager of the Village Baxter, you'd be following these stats pretty closely then,
absolutely.
Wouldn't you?
Mm.
And so what are you doing about it? I mean, you can be sort of armed with all this information. How do you practically?
We do. Every year we immunise our staff. We offer free flu vax, encourage people to have vaccinations, educate our residents that, you know, if you're feeling unwell, if you start to sneeze, let us know. So we can start what we call droplet precautions, which when someone's sneezing in flu season, we tend to isolate them and keep them away. Because one of the big things about flu is how contagious it is. It's cough, sneezing is enough to spread it. Mm. It can live on surfaces, so doorknobs.
Yes.
When you're at the shops, this is why we say wash your fruit, because you don't know who's walked past and sneezed.
Yes, remote controls, I guess.
Yes, remote controls, skin-to-skin contact, a big spreader of flu virus to the elderly happens to be grandchildren.
Wow.
Because they come, they cuddle, they kiss.
Yes.
They tend to have little colds all the time anyway.
Yeah.
And you'll often hear people say, oh, it's just a cold, she's fine.
Mm.
But it might be just a cold in someone who's young and healthy, but in someone who's older, it may actually not be a cold. It is actually the flu virus. And in the elderly, it goes to their chest.
So does that mean that a child can have just a normal cold and they cough or sneeze near an elderly, relative? And then, so does it actually transport to the elderly person as a influenza A or one of those strains?
The cold is basically a rhinovirus. It's a type of virus, and the cold virus, you tend to get the runny nose, maybe a bit of a headache, a few coughs and sneezes, and that's about it.
Mm.
And that can transfer to the elderly and create chest infections because they can't cough and sneeze as well as we can. But flu and cold symptoms appear very, very similar. The big difference is flu tends to hit very quickly and you get the muscle aches
and
pains.
Yes, you get the aches and your
but
bones.
But the symptoms
and,
are very similar. Yeah. So in someone healthy who can fight off the flu very quickly, they might think it's just a cold. But the only way to diagnose that is to actually have a swab and sent off to a lab
Have you got a medical background, Kim?
I'm a registered nurse.
I thought so. I mean, I'm hearing the lingo here. Yes. And it's very, very impressive.
Yeah.
So you're armed and you have the knowledge as well.
Yes.
I mean, the other thing that I'm noticing about the flu virus that's affected a couple of the older crew here is it's lingering this year as well.
Yes.
So usually, you know, you've described those classic symptoms of a flu. But in this instance, a couple of people are coming down with a sort of a post-flu sort of bronchial infection thing.
Mm. Yeah.
That is really knocking them around. And, I mean, they're really out for the count.
Yeah,
absolutely. And that's what we're finding this year, that it is going to people's chests and they are getting a lot sicker for a lot longer. And particularly if someone has asthma or has been a smoker for a long time, it's a lot harder for them to cough and clear their chests. Mm. And that's when you end up not only with the flu but a chest infection. And you end up needing antibiotics for a chest infection, but antibiotics don't make any difference to a flu virus.
No. And it's, at its worst, infestation would, of course, be a pneumonia symptom or a development into pneumonia later, which, of course, could be critical and fatal for older people.
Definitely.
So what do you do? You're obviously monitoring those symptoms in your village.
Monitor the symptoms very closely. There is a product called Tamiflu available through a GP if you have the right health requirements to take it. But you need to take Tamiflu basically within 24 hours of getting sick. It doesn't work if you've had the flu for a few days and then need to take it. And that will help the body fight it. But again, it won't stop you from actually developing the flu. It'll help you get away.
It's so hard to judge. I mean, if you have little children coming in to visit grandma or grandpa and, you know, you don't know they're going to sneeze or they're going to cough. It's such a, you know, a unknown reaction, and then off they go.
Absolutely. And one of the harder things about the flu is it's generally contagious a day before you actually have symptoms.
Oh, wow.
And then for about 7 days after. Yeah. But in children, that 7 days can actually stretch out even longer.
Gee.
So it's really hard to totally prevent it.
Well, it's almost an impossible task for you then in a village Baxter type environment, surely. I mean, if people are shedding virus before they even know that they've got symptoms, how do you stop that?
Yeah.
It's really, really difficult. What we, all aged care facilities, are required to meet certain healthcare standards, and one of them is produced by the Victorian government about managing colds and flu outbreaks. So if we have more than three people with respiratory symptoms, we instantly go into lockdown, and then everyone gets isolated, everything gets washed down, and it could just be that there's been a bit of dust, and that's the only reason why people were sneezing. But aged care facilities do have really good processes for identifying and tracking infections, and it is a daily shift-by-shift monitoring.
So these cases that we've been hearing of, the six people that died in Tasmania in that, you know, the last flu outbreak, and then the seven here in Wangaratta, is that so we're hearing about that on the media, but is that a common occurrence during a winter season?
During a winter season, you will always see, unfortunately, some flu-related deaths.
Mm.
What we're seeing this year is an unusual outbreak of flu right across the population, and of course that tends to target the elderly and the frail, who are then concentrated in populations like nursing homes. And even the best homes can have outbreaks.
You
know, it only takes one resident in a dining room to sneeze and has the potential to actually contaminate whoever's within the droplets of the sneeze.
Goodness me.
So it makes it very difficult to eliminate.
Yeah.
So the other big news story, of course, around all this is vaccination. Mm-hmm. To take the flu vaccine or not, you obviously are a strong advocate of it.
Yeah, I do. We offer it to all of our staff. I get vaccinated every year. And I've been very fortunate not to have had the flu since I started vaccinating. I know that some people for health reasons can't. But it is, it's a very contentious topic. Basically, healthcare workers in public hospitals have to have it.
It's mandatory.
It is for most public hospitals. There's a list of required vaccinations.
Yes, my daughter works at Frankston, Peninsula Health, and she had to have it. I know that. Yeah. But I've noticed, and it could be just, you know, I could be totally off the mark here, but I've noticed, I noticed when my father had, elderly father had the flu vaccination, he got the flu really badly that year. And I've noticed other people that have said they've had the flu injection, they seem to get ill. Is that, am I imagining that, you know, like, is that...
The flu injection covers a variety of different flu strains. We use the quadrivalent vaccine at where I work, which covers four different types of flu.
So is that sort of like your triple antigen of vaccine?
Yeah. Okay. So four different sorts of flu. And it won't prevent you from getting the flu. It will help your body fight the flu. But what's happening this year is the influenza A virus is mutating faster than what it has previously. So even though some people have had the immunisation, their body's not recognising it quick enough, so they are getting the flu. Wow. But because they've had their vaccination, they're not actually getting the other three strains.
Mm.
So it's still possible to get sick, but in my opinion, it's much safer to get the vaccine.
You see, this is the argument I had with a scientist the other day on the breakfast show. I was saying to him, how can you possibly come up with a vaccine that is 12 months old before we get it anyway? Yeah. I mean, and the thing is mutated in the 12 months since it's come from Europe down here to us. Surely, you know, it's a matter of catch-up. It can't be effective. But he claims that it can because they extrapolate where they think that the virus is going to go. They try and anticipate that in terms of what they're giving to the patients here in Australia by the time they come around for vaccination again.
Gee, that's a big call, isn't
it? It's a big call. It is, and they've got to anticipate a lot of variables and a mutating virus and try and second guess a mutating virus. Yeah. That is a tough...
I mean, you take difficult. A plane load of people coming from any state or country... You know, you'd have to say that unless they've all had been vaccinated, that there's a chance that, you know,
absolutely.
One of them might pass something on. Yeah.
Let me not put people off, but I did. I was a bit like your dad. I had the flu virus one year when the doctor insisted I take it. I was a gibbering mess that night. I started shaking and got this hot and cold flushes, and I was absolutely, and I swore off it. But I'm told by my doctor I'm being an absolute idiot. This is RPPFM. You're listening to The Age Stage. It's great to have your company, Brendan Telfer, Paula Dunn, and also we have Kim Jackson, the Executive Manager of Village Baxter, in the studio with us today. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, more of this on the other side of our sponsorships. RPPFM across the Mornington Peninsula, 98.7 and 98.3. You're tuned up to The Age Stage, a program that looks at issues and matters affecting older Australians. And, it's made possible by our friends at The Village Glen, Encore Living and Village Baxter. I'm delighted to say that Kim Jackson, the Executive Manager of Village Baxter, is in with Paula Dunn and I today as we explore all issues, sort of timely around this time of the year. We were talking before the break about flu vaccines, whether we should or whether we shouldn't. Kim is very strongly of the opinion that we should vaccinate. I think Paula is as well, and my doctor says that I should be as well. So it's a rough old time of the year. The weather ain't too flash, and Kim, big responsibilities for you in the village and retirement area, hey?
Absolutely. One of the things that everyone can do to help prevent flu in themselves is washing your hands with warm soapy water.
Mm.
So when you're going out and about, touching door handles that you don't know who's touched before you, just shaking hands, meeting people, it always helps to go and wash your hands. And don't touch your eyes, your nose and your mouth when you're out and about, because that's a really easy way to pick up a flu virus from a surface and then transport it into a moist area of your body.
Wow. So are you always monitoring that? I mean, you personally, when you go out and about, you're always sort of watching your personal safety in that sense, in terms of exposure to viruses?
Because I have a nursing background, I tend to be a little bit of a germaphobe, so I carry the hand cleanser, Sani Cleanse, in my car and in my handbag.
Sounds like my wife. She does
it. Is that, though, there's a theory that we're affecting our immune system by constantly sanitising ourselves and all, you know, that our immune system is depleting. What do you think about that? You know, because we're constantly using these hand sanitisers and things like that.
I think that we need to be reasonable with them.
Yeah.
I think with children need to get out, play in the dirt, get exposure to all sorts of bacteria and viruses and build up their healthy immune system.
Mm.
But working in healthcare, I recognise that I could actually spread disease if I'm not careful myself.
Yes.
So as a nurse, I think it's a responsibility that I need to keep myself clean and always have cleanser on my hands.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to meet someone, I'm not actually transferring things from one person to another.
Yeah.
So in a healthcare setting, I think you need to be a little bit more aware.
Yes.
Or if you're with someone that has some health issue, for example, someone having chemotherapy with cancer, that affects their immune system and they're a lot more susceptible to getting disease that ordinarily wouldn't affect someone who was healthy.
And the same with radiation therapy?
Yes. People that are having radiotherapy tend to have that because they have cancer, so their immune system is
down.
Compromised anyway.
Yes. Yeah.
And the other thing that can happen is once you've had the flu, you can become what we call deconditioned, which is it takes you, you know, a good month, 6 weeks to actually get back to feeling fit again.
Mm.
So you can be susceptible to picking up other viruses and colds during that time, which is where you hear some people say, I've had the flu, I thought I was over it, and all of a sudden I went down again.
Yes, you do hear that.
So are you suggesting then that people get onto regimes of vitamin tablets and stuff like that after they've been ill, or exercise, or any special concerns or treatment? Or
I think I don't particularly have vitamins that I encourage. What I encourage is get back to a healthy diet and stay away from the high sugar processed foods and have some good protein, good vegetables.
Mm. Living food.
Living food, absolutely. Drink lots of water because the more hydrated you are, the easier it is to actually fight things off. When you become dehydrated, it affects all of your body.
Yes.
In terms of influenza, I mean, it is a real killer. And after the First World War, there was that incredible outbreak that devastated probably more people through influenza at the end of the Great War, 1918-1919, than the war itself. It was just massive, wasn't it? We've obviously seen nothing like it. But is it possible that in the future we could see a mutating flu virus that could afflict us as badly?
Absolutely. It's one of those things that health departments have pandemic committees set up to prepare us all for what happens if there's a pandemic outbreak. And some years ago, there was all the hoo-ha about SARS.
Yes, that's right.
And lots of different bird flu, those things. Mm. And all healthcare facilities, including the Village Baxter, we had to have a contingency plan that if SARS really did have an outbreak, or the swine flu outbreak, if that was to hit, we had to have contingency plans covering everything from how we staff and look after sick people to what if we can't actually get supplies in. And all these sorts of contingency plans all happen in the background, and we hope they never have to be used.
So with elderly people, Kim, at the Village Baxter, do you work on your residents' immune system, like keeping them eating well and moving about and sort of, you know, encourage their immune system to,
I mean, everybody has three good solid meals a day. Yes. We have physio programs.
Yep.
We have regular doctors come in and check our residents. But the elderly, as much as you try and ensure that everyone has everything they need, part of aging, it comes along with chronic illness.
Yes.
And a lot of elderly people have lung problems. So you can try as much as you can to prevent something, but someone who has airways disease, been a lifelong smoker, and ends up with a chest infection, it's a lot harder to fight that off than it is for a healthy 50-year-old who's never smoked.
Yes. Yeah.
In terms of government regulation and stuff then, you know, monitoring situation, health outcomes for populations generally, I mean, how often are you conversing with the authorities to make sure that your practices at the Village Baxter are in place, they're up to form, and they can jump in if there is a big issue?
There's multiple points of contact. As part of aged care accreditation, there's a whole outcome on infection control, making sure that staff are educated, you've got good policies, good procedures, your cleaning meets a certain standard, even the laundry has to meet a certain standard. So that all happens all the time. But there are requirements in aged care facilities. If you have more than three residents with respiratory symptoms, so coughs, colds, or three residents who have upset stomachs, that actually becomes reportable to the health department. And there's a whole process of procedures that gets put in place after that. You go into what they call lockdown, where you don't have people come in and out of the building. You do extreme cleans where every single surface gets wiped down with bleach.
Wow.
So as executive manager, that's your role to coordinate all that?
Yeah, my director of nursing coordinates it in conjunction with me. And, yeah, we have clean and dirty staff. So one person will look after the sick people. Well, not one person, but a group of staff look after the sick people. Another group of staff will look after the well people. So you don't have transfer between them.
You don't think about that.
It's a real logistical issue that aged care facilities are well used to managing now.
And then as the executive manager, you then would have to sort of liaise with family and friends of the people that you have inside the Village Baxter to ensure that they understand this is a process that you have to, by law, go through.
Yeah, and families are generally very understanding and very grateful for the extra care and all the different things that get put into process. I know over the years where we've had different issues where we've had to go into that state, some families have gone round and waved at the window and talked to their relatives through the window, not wanting to bring anything into the facility. Most families are really very grateful that we do everything we can to protect their relatives.
Wow. So when do you go back into flu vaccines? When do you order the next round, the next batch, or is it ongoing? Or
we do our staff in April, and then we'll pick up anyone else. We have like an on-site flu vaccine procedure for staff in April, and most residents get done around the same time. Mm-hmm. And then staff that can't come, if they can go to a local pharmacy, we reimburse the cost for them.
So remind us of some of those figures that you started out with today. I mean, how many people have been...
133,000 are laboratory confirmed. So that means they've actually had the swab and they've come back with influenza of some sort this year.
They're genuine flu sufferers this season.
And there's 12,000 of those in Victoria.
Goodness.
And we still have 8 weeks of flu season to go.
So what do you do over the next 8 weeks then?
We become very paranoid.
Yeah, hold your breath.
Yes, hold your breath. You know, someone needs to only sneeze, I swear, down the other end of the property, and one of us will hear it and react. And it's a lot of it is talking to people and educating them, and reacting very early to any slight sign or symptom of someone having a cold.
So when you look at seven deaths, like in Wangaratta. Yeah. Even though that's absolutely tragic, when you're looking at figures like you just quoted, that's not bad, really, considering how many people are actually have the
glue. Unfortunately, I don't know a lot about Wangaratta and their particular what happened there, but I do know that given, you know, 133,000 confirmed cases in the elderly, we are unfortunately going to have a higher number of deaths with related to the flu. And being elderly, sometimes the flu can run people down physically to the point where other health-related
happen.
Problems...
Yes. Well, those seven were aged between 70 and 94.
Yeah.
So they certainly were elderly.
They would. And being in residential care, they're going to be frailer and have more health problems than people that were living out in the community in their own home. Mm.
Fascinating stuff. Kim, thank you very much indeed for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Indeed.
Thanks, Kim.
Kim Jackson is the Executive Manager of Village Baxter, and of course Village Baxter alongside of the Village Glen and Encore Living, making the age stage possible right here on RPPFM. When we come back on the other side of the break, we're going to be speaking to Kathleen Jordan. She's suffered a major and catastrophic stroke and she's completely rebuilt her life. We'll listen to her story with much interest on the other side of this break. And you're on RPPFM, your local radio station across the Mornington Peninsula. Great to have your company. This is The Age Stage. It's Thursday morning here, and of course The Age Stage is made possible by our friends at Village Baxter, The Village Glen and Encore Living. Well, it is National Stroke Week, and to help us publicise the work of the National Stroke Foundation, it's time to introduce you to our next guest, Kathleen Jordan. Kathleen enjoyed a prominent and very successful business career. But at the height of her powers in 2011, she was struck down with a major stroke and a near-death experience. Well, the second part of her life has been equally successful as she has completely rehabilitated her life, and she joins us on the phone now. Kathleen, welcome to RPPFM and The Age Stage.
Thank you, Brendan.
Lovely to talk to you again, Kathleen. This is an amazing journey that you're on, and it's a journey that we need to take close note of in this, of course, which is National Stroke Week.
Yes, most definitely. Stroke is the biggest killer in Australia. It kills more people than more women than breast cancer and more men than prostate cancer.
Really? Well, and does it target a particular age group, Kathleen?
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
It is mainly over 50s, but teenagers and even children can have a stroke.
The important thing then, Kathleen, in terms of your experiences, treatment and diagnosis was absolutely crucial to your remarkable recovery.
Yes, it certainly was. I am very grateful for the medical specialist who looked after me, and then the nurses, and then the allied health people. So I've really been through the full gamut of any job you could think of in the hospital.
And take us through, Kathleen, just how that procedure went, you know, from the time you had the stroke. Just take us through what happened.
Well, I was fortunate that I was with a doctor at the time I was working. I was with a doctor making a presentation about some research he was doing, and I suddenly collapsed onto the floor. But fortunately, he recognise the signs. My left side of my mouth had drooped, and I was dizzy. And when I collapsed onto the floor, I was still saying, no, I don't need an ambulance, as she was calling. And, of course, thank goodness he didn't listen to me.
Yes.
And of course, so thereby are a couple of the symptoms that we should look out for if we do see somebody in similar circumstances. Is that not right, Kathleen? What are the symptoms?
This stroke week is about fast. F for face, A for arms, S for speech, and T for time. So the F for face is if you see someone who is showing symptoms of being very unwell and their mouth is drooping, then that's the face. Then the thing is that a stroke is always a medical emergency. So back to fast, the A is around arms. Can the person lift both their arms up in the air? And the S is about slurred speech.
Mm.
And the T is about time is of the essence. Get the person to hospital as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm. In your case, you did, and your rehabilitation has been remarkable, but nevertheless, it was a catastrophic stroke. Have you been able to teach yourself to use different parts and different brain capacities to compensate for the damage that was done?
Well, that's a very good question. I'm certainly doing a lot of things like playing bridge with my friends
Bring your numeracy back perhaps, or
yes, or even my concentration.
Yeah,
and also just by having different experiences, like getting back into going to the ballet and the opera, playing chess with my grandson, and that sort of thing.
Mm.
Just anything I can is because you know when you have a stroke, your brain sort of switches off. So the left side of my body and my brain are not communicating, and this is 6 years after the stroke, and it may well be that it never will communicate properly, although I don't like to say never.
Mm.
And some of the things I do, which might be of interest to your listeners, is I try and reframe things. If I start to get miserable that I might be going to have carers, for the rest of my life, I say to myself, yes, well, that may be the case, but at least you're alive to enjoy your life, and how wonderful that you've got all these lovely women, because I mainly do have women carers, who are prepared to look after you.
Do you find yourself, Kathleen, ruminating about when the stroke happened and what might, you know, and worrying about the future or becoming depressed that it happened at all to you in the past?
No, I don't.
Good.
Because I just think I am alive and I'm making great progress, and I've got my family who care about me and my friends who care about me. So really life is good, and I've actually achieved a lot in terms of being, I'm now living independently in my own home, which my daughters were told I never would.
Mm.
And I think celebration is a very important thing when you go through trauma. So I celebrate the plus things, even down to celebrating the 6th anniversary of my stroke, which is a very peculiar thing to celebrate. But I do. I celebrate that I'm alive and enjoying life.
Yes, that's wonderful.
And of course, you've charted a lot of this history and how you've combated this illness in your book, Kathleen.
I have, yes.
And the book.
I'm hoping it will help. I'm hoping it will help other people and their families understand stroke, and give people hope that it is possible to beat it.
Well, you're a great inspiration. What's the name of what's the title of the book, Kathleen?
It's called Standing Up, My I've had a brain failure at this moment.
So let me help you. So it's Standing Up, My Story of Hope and Advocacy and Survival After Stroke.
Oh, bless you, Brendan. Thank you. Yes.
It's a wonderful story, Kathleen. It's absolutely brilliant. If I could I take you back into the trauma of the stroke itself? Were you aware as you were rehabilitating yourself, as you had to retrain your mind and your brain, that you were not functioning the way you had been and that it was a frustration for you? Were you conscious of that process, sort of
yes.
trapped to a degree with inside a body that was not functioning the way it had?
Yes, I certainly was. Right down to my family would come in and I'd start to sort of scribble in the air, wanting a pen so I could write down what I wanted to say to them, and because I did lose speech to start off with.
That must have been so frustrating and at the same time terrifying.
It was both, yes.
Yes, yes.
But now listen to you, Kathleen. Yes. It's an absolute tribute to
Wonderful.
You that you're here, you're fighting, you've produced the book and you can tell us all about the journey and probably be of great comfort for many of us that maybe face the prospect of a stroke in the future and or those that might be recovering.
Well, I hope so, because do you know there are 500,000 people who are stroke survivors who are disabled because of the stroke. It's the largest reason for disability as well.
So it obviously bodes the government to put and invest more time and energy into rehabilitation and also prevention as well. How do we best prevent the prospect of stroke?
I think it's by having regular medical checkup and I guess listening to the doctor, which perhaps I didn't do. Although my blood pressure was under control, I was living a crazy business life because I loved it. I was travelling a lot, so I did not listen to my doctor saying, slow down, Kathleen.
Oh, so you had the signals. There were cues there for you and you chose not to.
Well, only because I was just loving what I was
yes,
doing.
Yes, of course.
My blood pressure was being kept under control, and I guess I just thought I was... what's the word?
Invincible.
That's the one. Thank you. I have mild aphasia every now and again, but my friends assure me so do they.
Yes.
Believe me, we all do, Kathleen. You're not alone. God love you. You are nowhere near alone. So that's it then. So be mindful, regular checkups. Healthy eating, I guess, a little bit of exercise as well doesn't go adrift as well, huh?
Yes, that's right. But also have hope that you can beat it.
Yes, yeah.
What regime do you embark on now, Kathleen? What do you do to maintain your health now? What do you do that might be different, or what regime have you adopted?
I continue to walk a little bit, but obviously I can no longer walk. Do a half-hour walk as I used to in the morning because I'm walking very slowly. But the thing is, I am at least walking. My family were told I would never walk again and I'd be a vegetable in an aged care home.
Oh, goodness.
And I'm none of those things. So I do as much exercise. I have physio 2 or 3 times a week, which helps as well, and yeah.
So when you heard that sort of a diagnosis and prognosis for your prospects, did that give you the resolution to fight more and to prove the doctors and those doomsayers wrong?
Absolutely. I'm a very determined person. And when my daughters and my sisters were told that perhaps they should think about NFR, not for resuscitation for me, they said, don't be daft. She will win this, beat this. She's a very determined person.
So you use the power of your mind,
I
Kathleen.
I do, yeah,
yes.
Very much so. Yeah.
And it's a big part, isn't it, of any
Absolutely.
Sort of recovery. Yes, yeah, fantastic.
It's a brilliant story, Kathleen, and we thank you so much for sharing some of it with us here on the Age Stage today.
Oh, well, thank you. I've enjoyed talking to you again, Brendan, and to you, Paula.
Thank you.
It's
and
wonderful.
Thank you for reminding everybody the name of my book, which I had ridiculously forgotten.
Don't you worry about a thing. I just hope you've got my back one of these days soon, Kathleen, okay?
Okay.
That's what we're all about here at Ardor PFM. It is National Stroke Week, and you can enjoy the story that Kathleen can tell in her wonderful book, It is a very powerful book about advocacy and survival from a debilitating stroke. She's done it, and so can you. Kathleen, thanks so much for joining us today on the Age Stage.
Thanks, Kathleen.
Thank you, Brendan. Thank you, Paula.
Speak to you again. Great to have your company today, Brendan Telfer and Paula Dunn in the studio with you with this week's edition of the Age Stage. Well, before the break, we spoke to Kathleen Jordan about her amazing work recovering from a debilitating stroke. In fact, it was quite catastrophic. But right now, we can talk to Felicity Wood, our next guest on the program, who is the founder of Bad Backs. Because believe you me, as you probably all are well aware, a bad back is not a good thing to have. And Felicity, welcome to the Age Stage.
Thank you.
Backs, they're pivotal, literally, aren't they, in our day-to-day physical well-being? And you've identified a small niche business, but what brought you to this place? Why bad backs?
Well, I experienced an accident in my teens and struggled for many years in trying to find some answers. So as a person in her 50s, I decided that I would like to do something about helping myself, but also others who had issues with trying to, perhaps not a cure, but maybe finding some solutions to manage back pain.
There's so many, isn't there, Felicity? It's Paula here. There's so many different things that people are told they should and shouldn't do when suffering a back problem.
I think the issue there is that it's so difficult to actually find the cause. Pain is typically subjective, and yes, where people sometimes feel the pain, it's not always the actual cause of it. So we find, because we talk to people every day in our stores and through our online store, about all sorts of back pain issues. But what we endeavour to do is to work with them amongst our range of therapeutic products to actually find something that will work for them.
You came to this through an injury yourself, injury. I mean, is there anything that we can do in our day-to-day lives to prevent the prospect of a back injury? Core fitness? Have I got to get my abs?
Absolutely, Brendan. Look, that's a great question. And prevention really is at the forefront and the thing we all should work on. And it doesn't matter whether you're 16 or 66. If you can embrace prevention, you're going to make your life just so much healthier and so much better. So, and I think today there's a lot of opportunities out there for, well, first of all, I think the first thing is to be active. And today you can be active even if you're sitting in your office seat or all types of work environments, because today there is products out there that can help you. For instance, it might be a treadmill desk. It could be something in active seating. It's today there's such great innovation in product. I think people would be surprised the opportunities for, in our case, it's product, but of course there's also therapies to actually find some solutions. But another thing we do find is if people are prepared to embrace the process with the people they're working with, for instance, a lot of people just choose to go to their doctor, their surgeon, and they put themselves in their hands. Others want to be empowered. They want to know, what can I try? What things may work for me? And embracing that and understanding the importance of being active, doing things that are going to improve your well-being is a great start.
Felicity, I have my eldest daughter, when she was 14, was diagnosed with idiosyncratic scoliosis. And as a result of that, her life span was going to finish at about 30. So she had two Harrington rods inserted in her back to keep one to keep the spine straight and the other to keep the other rod straight. And she's now a mother of two, very active. But the top of her spine and the very lower parts of her spine are aging much quicker. She's a woman of 38 now.
Right.
And so because the middle of her back doesn't move. Yeah, so she suffers quite badly with pain. She does really well with it, but suffers at different times. She does Pilates and things like that. But yeah. What could she do for something like that?
Hmm. I think it's probably best, in terms of products, I think a visit to the Bad Back store and to just have a look at what the range is. Now, for instance, has she tried any of the TENS machines?
No.
Well, I think for someone who's had any form of surgery, we always ask them to... and so any products we think they should try, we would always say, please consult either your surgeon or your physical therapist, or whoever the person may be in that area, to ensure that it helps. For instance, is there some form of traction that might help? So to give it a definitive answer is not easy, because pain isn't easy.
No, that's right.
But there are lots and lots of options. And so whether we can work it out together with your, for instance, with your daughter, or in conjunction with health professionals, people really should be encouraged to know that there are lots of things out there. And sometimes it's simple things. I can remember an 85-year-old gentleman came in to our store 3 or 4 years ago, and he said, look, I think I need a new chair. And we said, okay, and what was the problem? Well, actually, I have difficulty sleeping. So we went from what he thought was his problem in having a new chair and feeling uncomfortable to actually not getting any sleep. So we addressed his sleep, and he left the store with a simple leg wedge because the way he was sleeping, it was just he has irritation in his sciatic area and in his lower back, but he simply raised his legs up a little bit on a seat, on a bed leg wedge, and he felt much better. So sometimes it's just exploring all areas, because people do come to us and they think it's a particular product they may need.
Yes.
But after we delve in and ask lots of questions, we find might be something else. But today there's so much conversation about workplaces.
Yes, there is.
So whether you've got it's your home office, or whether it's in a big or small company, there's lots of things today that can help you to move.
Yes, those desks that can stand up.
There's products now you can simply put, if you don't want to replace your desk, there are things, products you can put on top of your
desk
that adjust.
Yeah.
Or even a treadmill desk.
Yes.
There you go.
Yeah, interesting. That would be interesting.
So. And then the other area that I think we find is very special is zero gravity. Do you think your listeners would know about zero gravity?
No, Felicity, but you can try us.
Well, of course, perhaps you do recall that NASA designed zero gravity so that the astronauts had this perfect journey into space. Well, that concept has been developed in furniture today. So if you lie or relax in a zero gravity position, you have zero pressure on your back. And the principle is really simple. So say, for instance, you're just laying on your bed, you raise your top half of your body and you lift your knees so that your heart is lower than your knees and your head, it delivers zero pressure. So sometimes people can manage getting through the day, but when they relax or when they go to bed, that's when all the pain starts. So we've got a lovely range of indoor, outdoor recliners that are in this zero gravity position, and also we just sell bed and leg wedges, but people could just do it with pillows. Long as they just think mentally about, well, is my heart lower than my head and my knees?
Okay.
And what about your predicament, Felicity? Has it improved now, having worked
I manage it. If I'm stressed, if I find I'm just very tired, anxious, it certainly plays up, but I've got a bit of a, I have lots of different products I can use, but for me, every morning I need to massage my hands because I'm spending so many hours on the computer, so I get to with a massage machine, and then I stretch because I think I'm quite stiff when I wake up, but doing about a 10, 15-minute little sort of yoga type stretching regime I have, and then a warm shower, that certainly helps me.
Where do we find you, Felicity, if we want to know more about bad backs? Where are you?
Yeah, well, I think firstly that people visit the website at badbacks.com.au. We have retail stores in Melbourne, Sydney and Perth, and our store here in Melbourne is at 440 Burwood Road, Hawthorne.
Just quickly, as you look out at your customers and your business, are you seeing more bad backs?
I think there's still, people often refer to it as still an epidemic because we have adopted a more of a sedentary type of lifestyle. That's true. But we also see a growing number of people who are becoming more engaged in prevention, and if they do have issues, either have had an injury or something has developed into a chronic pain, they're keen to work with others to help manage it. Because not always a cure, but I think if you can manage it, then you can be very fulfilled and have a wonderful well-being.
Felicity, thank you very much indeed for sharing your knowledge and your expertise about bad backs with us today. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Felicity.
Okay.
Felicity Wood, who is founder of Bad Backs, and some interesting stuff there, and obviously some information that you can take away as well, I hope, for your daughter Paula.
Mm-hmm.
You've been listening to The Age Stage, and if you're just joining us, unfortunately, you've missed a very entertaining discussion with Kim Jackson, who was the executive manager of the Village Baxter, joined us today talking about the flu vaccine and what we can do to prevent flu in and around our environment. And also Kathleen Jordan, who is a recoverer from what was a very debilitating stroke in this National Stroke Week. Paula, thank you so much indeed for being with me today.
You're welcome, Brendan. Great to be here.
And we will be back next week, and we were talking to Kim as well. We're having a look next week, we think.
We're talking about exercise, and we're going to have someone from the Village Glen, Madeline, to talk to us about sorts of exercises to do as we're ageing, and also Kim's going to come back and talk to us about that as well, I think.
Sounds interesting. Mm. You've been listening to The Age Stage on RPPFM. Thank you very much indeed for your company, and once again, thanks to our great sponsors making it possible to get to air. The Village Baxter, the Village Glen, and Encore Living. I'm Brendan Telfer.